Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, and welcome to Press One for Democracy. This is your host, live, actually live. He's back. It's Dan Aronson, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, where it was a beautiful, sunny, lovely day. However, the condo association decided to use this lovely, sunny day to repaint the outside of our condominium, so you may hear a very, well, somewhat loud air power device, the air generators that they use to spray on the paint the outsides of houses, and I apologize in advance for that. But that's okay, because tonight we've got an interesting show for you. We've got an interview with Billy Sears. Billy Sears was one of the original Coffee Party members. He actually started locally and then quickly got involved on the national level when he befriended Annabelle Park, the co-founder of the party, and so he moved from being locally involved and into the national arena, where he had several different jobs over the course of his tenure there. He was in charge of membership development at one point, he actually became the deputy executive director of the Coffee Party. So here was a guy who was basically number two in charge. And he was the, as he liked to call it, the back end. He was the back end guy for Annabelle and Eric, who were the front men and women, right? So this was a guy who had his fingers in basically everything that was going on at one point or another in the Coffee Party. And given what we've been going through lately, I've just been driven by kind of insatiable curiosity to do some research and to go back and find out, because I myself did not join the party until 2000 and late 2011, early 2012. So I'm a relative newcomer, and I wanted to learn about what had been taking place in the past and see if there weren't any lessons that could be learned, things that were done right, good things that we could take and move forward with, and then any kind of things that people kind of viewed as mistakes that maybe we could see if we can avoid those happening now and in the future, so that we can strengthen this organization and grow it into what we all, I think, hoped it would be when we joined, which was a movement, a serious movement, pushing transpartisan, civil, and fact-based discussions on political items of the day, which is really, that's the mission, right? That's the general mission. And then, of course, we branched out and we brought our three issues to the table, starting with getting money out of politics. And we obviously have an important mission, because until we can get money out of politics, the government can continue to serve its corporate masters. It will not serve the people what it's supposed to serve. And things will probably just go from bad to worse as far as income inequality and caring for our children and offering better education. And it won't get worse for the 2%, but it'll definitely get worse for the 98%. So it's an important mission. And again, we just wanted to bring, I wanted to find out and get some historical context. So tonight's show really focuses on pre-Dan Coffee Party. So this is going to be, we're going to start with the beginning of the party, the inception of the party, and we're going to go through the rally. And if we don't get it all in tonight, because I do have a lot of tape of the interview, then we'll just extend it on into next week and make it a part due, if you will. But I think for now we've got a lot of callers on the line. If you want to participate, of course, when you get into queue, when you call in, just press 1. Because if you've called in, we want to hear your stories, if you were around during those times, and see what your opinions and your viewpoints and your, what were your hopes and dreams when you entered the Coffee Party? And how are we doing? And what can we do better? And and how can we strengthen this organization? So if you call in, that's 646-929-2495. And then when you get into the queue again, you just press the one key, and that the little light goes up on the board that tells me you want to share. So with that, I guess without further ado, I will let's get into this interview, and we'll start with part one again. This is Billy Sears, my interview with Billy Sears, former deputy executive director of the Coffee Party. And let's hear what transpired.
Welcome to the show. Glad to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Billy, do you go back to the very beginning of the party?
Yes, I do. I would say probably within the first 3 weeks to a month when Coffee Party got off the ground as, you know, really more than a Facebook page. One of the first events that was held nationally was a National Coffee Party Week. Basically, the whole idea of this was everyone gets together, you know, in a coffee house, you know, gets to know each other, gets to know the coffee party, and, you know, really just kind of start that dialogue that Annabelle and Eric have spoke about. So that was within the first month. And in Champaign-Urbana, our local group, we participated in that. And it's really, it was a good start for us.
So you said that what you said within a month of it becoming more than just a Facebook page, how long was it between Annabelle's utterance of we don't need a tea party, we need a coffee party? How long was it before it melded into something more than just a Facebook page?
Oh, it was quick. It was very quick. My recollection is that Annabelle actually hosted the first kind of informal coffee party meeting at a place in D.C. And, you know, within just a few weeks of that, you know, we had a web page built. She was being interviewed on CNN. She wrote an op-ed for the Washington Post. Just a really funny kind of side story about, you know, this, I can't recall if it was for the interview for CNN or the op-ed for the Washington Post, but at that time, there wasn't actually a website. It was just the Facebook page. A couple folks from Colorado actually got together and created the whole website over a weekend, just so when Annabelle gave this presentation to the media, they had something more than a Facebook page to go off of. So, I mean, it was quick.
So when you first got going, do you think that there was really this hope of creating this movement, or was it more just kind of like a collective wish for civility and reason?
I honestly do think that, you know, when Annabelle made that post, you know, she was kind of hoping what happened would happen, you know, that a bunch of people would, you know, really kind of, you know, share her feelings, you know, start to work together, you know, start to organize. And, I mean, I really do feel that that was her intention. You know, she was really hoping to kind of work towards creating kind of a positive spin on what the Tea Party had been doing at the time. You know, just some of the vitriolic comments that they were making, and so to speak, and I really think she just wanted to, really bring people together, you know, not necessarily to combat what the Tea Party was doing, but just to prove that, you know, they're not the only voice out there.
Gotcha. And what was it specifically that drew you to the Coffee Party?
Well, I mean, that's actually kind of a funny story, too, because it was pretty indirectly the Tea Party that brought me to the Coffee Party. The person that I was living with at the time, his brother-in-law was the founder of the East Central Illinois Tea Party. And, I mean, I consider myself pretty much socially liberal, and I would say moderate, I'd say fiscally conservative. You know, I mean, I've got some pretty interesting ideas today, but, you know, 4 years ago, I would have went as far as to call myself a socialist. So, you know, we would have some pretty interesting Facebook conversations. You know, it was basically, you know, well, the Tea Party is right. Everyone who doesn't agree with the Tea Party is wrong. And, you know, those conversations would get very heated. And, you know, I was just kind of looking around the internet one night, and I don't remember if I just actually just typed in Coffee Party or if I just came across it in a post, but, you know, came across the Facebook page, found the website, which at the time was still under construction. So this actually was probably the weekend that they put it together, and we just kind of went from there.
Cool. So were you involved locally first and then nationally, or were you involved yeah. with the national movement from the get-go?
Yeah, just locally first. You know, we was actually one of the, our local chapter was actually one of the chapters that Annabelle visited within the first few months. I mean, we actually had the advantage that Annabelle's sister was a resident of Champaign-Urbana at the time. So, you know, she helped us, you know, she really helped us get things off the ground. And then, you know, Annabelle made her visit, I'd say within about 3 weeks of us having our first meeting. So, I mean, yeah, it was locally, it was just locally for me at the start. And then within a few months, I started helping out in various capacities on the national side, so to speak.
Okay, and while you were active locally, what was that experience like? Did it meet up to the expectations of what you thought it should be or what you thought it would be?
Well, you know, I mean, I really didn't have any expectations per se, because, I mean, one of the real beauties, I mean, of the Coffee Party is that, I mean, a lot of us, myself included, we've never done this before. You know, we'd never organized anything. You know, I mean, we had people, I mean, we had, you know, soccer moms that were organizing for the first time, you know, retired folks that were organizing for the first time. You know, I mean, a lot of us, I mean, you know, we weren't really sure what we were doing, but, you know, we had a pretty good network, you know, via the internet, Facebook, you know, really kind of supporting each other. So, I mean, it was a very positive experience. I mean, I know that we did things right in some areas, and other areas, you know, we probably could have worked harder, but a lot of that was just, you know, we didn't know what we were doing.
Well, so was there any training offered then as far as organizing or activism?
Not really through the Coffee Party. You know, I mean, there were, I believe at the time, kind of weekly calls, you know, for folks that were interested. The Coffee Party didn't offer any training, per se. I do remember that one of Annabelle's hopes down the road was that, yeah, you know, we actually would offer, you know, training for people that want to organize. But, I mean, at the time of the startup, I mean, it was just so much chaos that, you know, I mean, just at the time, you know, just wasn't really in the cards, so to speak.
So, how large did your chapter, local chapter, get?
Well, our local group, we had, I would say, 12, I would say, hardcore members, folks that were with us, you know, every time we had a meeting. Now, we did have people that would come and go, you know, attend one meeting, find out that, you know, maybe it really wasn't what they expected, and, you know, we'd never see them again. And, you know, a lot of the reason for that is, you know, you have a name like the Coffee Party. You know, most of the time, you know, you're going to get folks in there that think, okay, you know, we've found some folks that are here to fight the Tea Party. You know, and then we try to explain to them, well, you know, this isn't really about a fight. You know, we're really kind of trying to offer kind of a reasonable alternative to the Tea Party. And, you know, for a lot of people, unfortunately, I mean, they just didn't understand that or didn't want to understand that, or were just looking for a fight. So.
Oh, that's interesting. So they were drawn to the coffee party looking for a fight, only to find out that the coffee party was about not fighting.
Exactly. And that was not isolated to just the local groups either. You know, early on, there was kind of a schism in the national organization of folks, you know, who really did want to take the coffee party in that direction. You know, folks that, you know, wanted to fight the Tea Party. You know, and there's actually a video on YouTube of Annabelle discussing this. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people left, you know, because of that. And, I mean, I can understand that.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And I've heard that story very consistently. And I sometimes still see it raising its head these days. In other words, I think some of these folks stuck around and have stuck with it. Maybe their intent is to see if they can't steer it that way, but did you see any of the people that wanted the party to go in that direction sticking around, or did they all just leave right away?
You know, I mean, thinking back, I mean, I do think some folks held out, you know, with the hope that, you know, we're really going to, you know, kind of turn this into, you know, the progressive version of the Tea Party. I do think some people did stick around for that, but, I mean, after a while, I mean, I think folks just kind of realized, you know, it's not going to happen. You know, I mean, I have a few people on my Facebook page that, you know, were really hoping for that, but, I mean, I am still friends with today, and, you know, I mean, I do think that's what they were hoping for, but, you know, once they realized, you know, it's not going to happen, yeah, they just kind of went their own separate ways.
Okay, and for those who stuck around and embraced the mission, as it were, what was the general feeling? What was the general atmosphere within the group? I mean, did they think they were onto something new and exciting? Did they expect big changes? Did they think they were at the center of something really big? What was that like?
Yeah, I do think we all felt like we were on the center of something big. You know, I mean, at the start of anything, you know, of this magnitude, you know, I mean, there's always, you know, a lot of optimism. And, I mean, for me personally, and I know some of the people that I work with, you know, we thought, you know, we're single-handedly, you know, going to change the climate in Washington, you know, and I mean, that was the general atmosphere.
Okay, and how long did you see that sustained? Or is it still that way today?
I would say it's not that way today. I don't think today's coffee party doesn't resemble anything from the beginning, unfortunately. I would say that started to change back in, oh gosh, I would say about a year into it. You know, about 9 months after the initial creation of the coffee party, we had a convention in Louisville. You know, and Annabelle proclaimed, you know, this is pretty much the birth of the coffee party. You know, and she made a point to mention that, you know, the convention was being held exactly 9 months after that initial post that she made on her Facebook page, which, you know, I thought the timing on that was, you know, pretty great. You know, she made a point to say that, you know, we need to turn this into an organization, you know, to sustain. You know, she appointed an interim board made up of local organizers from all over the country. You know, that was the direction that we were going, you know, to turn into, you know, a viable 501c4 nonprofit organization. Honestly, where it kind of started to change was I guess, when Annabelle pretty much dismissed that interim board. You know, and her reasoning behind it was that it just wasn't working out. There was a lot of disagreements.
Disagreements amongst the board members, or disagreements between herself and the board, or both?
Well, I mean, to be perfectly honest, I didn't actually speak to any of the board members about, you know, their disagreements. But there is actually a letter that they submitted, you know, which actually called out things, you know, basically, you know, projects were being started, they just stopped midway, work that had been done was being just disregarded, you know, basically just pointing to the founders that, you know, it's just, this isn't how this is done in a real organization. You know, one person or two people do not have, you know, just complete control. So, and, you know, Annabelle pretty much, you know, saw this coming, I guess, is the best way to put it. She assembled a conference call with seven organizers from across the country. I was one of those organizers. She told us her plans. And this is where the transition team was formed. The transition team basically took over from the interim board when Annabelle dismissed them. And we came into quite a mess. There was a lot of questions from the organizers about what was going on, you know, why the board was dismissed, the future of the coffee party, just a lot of different questions. You know, we were receiving emails, just personal attacks towards us, you know, just, you know, folks saying, well, we can do this better than you, you know, just turn the organization over to the members, you know, just various things like that.
So there you have it, part one of our interview with Billy Sears, former executive deputy executive director of the Coffee Party. An interesting retelling of the birth of the Coffee Party, one I had certainly not heard. But here we had this great groundswell of excitement, people feeling they're coming together, doing something really big, a big game changer. And it seemed that everything is going well. Local chapters are organizing. There's a lot of momentum. And then we start looking at internal struggles. You know, the founders are trying to turn it over to the membership. They're trying to get some kind of democratic process involved, and that's seemingly where a lot of the a lot of things happen. So again, though, that's Billy Sears' version of the story. We would love to hear yours. So if you'd like to share with us, give us a holler at 646-929-2495. Again, you're listening to Press One for Democracy. This is your host, Dan Aronson. We're back live after a little bit of a hiatus and looking forward to exploring more of our history and our past and seeing how we can learn from that to move forward and make this organization the strong organization that we all want it to be. And again, looking for people's recollections on that, and what do you think we can learn from our past, right? Because, of course, the old adage I think everyone agrees to is those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it. So if you'd like to help us out with that, go ahead and give us a call at 646-929-2495, press 1, and we will happily take your call and listen to your story. But if not, we've got more of the Billy Sears interview coming up. Well, right as I said that, I was going to go into a little break, but we've got area code 641 calling. 641, your mic is hot. Who do we have the pleasure of speaking with?
Hi, it's Bob Woodburn.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Oh, doing okay. Doing okay. You asked for calls from people who have been there basically at the beginning, and I joined when Coffee Party invited people to Founders Membership in the first February of the organization.
And what was it? Can you explain Founders Membership? Was that a specific program to drive membership?
Yes. Yes, apparently. I was under the impression that, you know, we who were founding members would get some kind of a recognition for that on our membership cards. It didn't happen. And my recollection of joining the party, joining the Coffee Party movement was, I don't remember how I found out about the Coffee Party, but I remember finding it, taking the test, and saying, yeah, a lot of people have a lot more in common that they agree on, and those avenues can be a basis for common discussion, and the rest of it can go hang and become a common ground for discussion with somebody else.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So you measured the test, and can you confirm to me that what you're talking about is the sphere?
Yeah,
I love that thing. I have called for its return on many occasions. I think that this sphere is absolutely brilliant. I've actually spoken to the gentleman who actually created it. The only thing I ever had a problem just
correlated. That's the problem. I was never able to get my hands on somebody else's sphere.
Right, so I just think for people who weren't around at the time of that, let me describe what that test was. So basically what it was is it was a test probably, if I'm remembering, 20 or 30 questions worth. And it basically, the idea was to gauge how important you felt things, different issues were, and also how well you think we were doing or not doing on certain issues. How did you feel we were doing on education? How were we doing on foreign affairs? How were we doing on all these different political topics? And then basically what it did is it created a, if you're old enough to like me to remember the spire graph, it just created a little graph of a wheel, although it wasn't a wheel, and it just plotted out the dots in a circular pattern, right? And then what the idea was is that you printed that out and you took it to a Coffee Party meeting, and you could overlay your sphere on top of another person's sphere and see where you had points in common. And that was the brilliance, right, Bob? Because then you could focus on those areas where you had points in common.
Right.
And immediately have a naturally more civil conversation on those than where you have points that were way different.
Right.
Yeah. The only thing that I asked the gentleman who created that, I said, did you ever consider amassing demographics and demographic profiles? So what do all men, you know, men, women, age ranges, races, religions, whatever. So you could kind of get an idea maybe of the group, where that group was, and even find out where groups had strong things in common. And he said, well, that was never intended for that. He said, but that's probably not a bad idea. So we had to find a way to bring back the sphere. But once you took the sphere and did you actually go to a local coffee meeting and actually meet with people?
Because I don't drive, I wasn't able to do that. But you've seen that where I can get my hands on data through the internet, I'm rather unusually communicative.
Yeah, yes, you are, and we appreciate that. And oh, by the way, even though you don't have it printed on your membership card, in this forum, you are beyond reproach. If you say you are a founding member, you are a founding member.
I was. I joined the very first February after the Coffee Party was founded.
And so,
yeah.
So you were involved basically then just through the social media outlets and the
Right. And that's the way I've always been able to do it. I wasn't able to go to Louisville, and I wish I had been able, but I wasn't able to do it. I'm sure that would have been wondrous for me.
Yeah, and in the next section, Billy's going to talk about the convention. And one of the things that I mean, that's really where I came in to the Coffee Party. My Coffee Party history starts with my wife reading her paper on a Sunday morning, telling me, hey, there's this new group, and they're having this meeting in Louisville. And or actually, it was in Nashville. In Nashville, I believe.
No, it was in Louisville.
It was in Louisville, really?
Louisville,
okay.
Kentucky. Yeah.
Huh. Okay, I got that wrong. See, I'm learning more. That's why I need to talk to people around then, because I'm learning. But I remember wanting to go very badly, and it just it was coming up too soon, and I just couldn't arrange it. So that sounded like a wonderful thing, and like I said, Billy talks about the convention. And what a wonderful experience it was for him, and so yeah, I mean,
some of it
I wish the both of us could have gone.
Some of it was available on the internet. I forget how they did that, but it was.
Well, I don't want to steal his thunder, because I know he's going to talk about it a little, but Lawrence Lessig co-hosted with some Republican gentlemen, and they did like a mock con-con?
I'm not sure about a mock con-con, but I know he was there and spoke, because I saw him speak.
Yeah,
but I don't remember a mock con-con.
An absolutely brilliant speech. I will endeavor during the next section of Billy's interview I will put up the link to it on YouTube. It's an absolutely brilliant speech by Lawrence Lessig, which basically concludes. Well, never mind. I won't spoil it for you. But
I think the Constitutional Convention was a separate planned event.
Okay.
I'm trying to piece it together the same way you are.
Okay. So when did you see things start to change? When did the kind of the proverbial error start leaking out of the balloon, do you think?
I'd say when the membership started being separated but not marginalized from the board.
Okay. Can you expand on that?
Okay. When the board started becoming more insular the board got, the more that caused difficulty with the general membership.
And when you say the board, are we talking about the transition? Excuse me, the interim board, the transition team, the first elected board, or the second elected board?
I would say that the seed was planted right after the first elected board took office, because everybody was wanting everybody to get in touch, and then when you got in touch with them, they referred you to somebody else.
Okay. So the clear lines of communication weren't there.
Right. And that's been the hallmark of the relation of the board to the membership ever since, only it has transitioned and has in fact got better, because instead of everything kind of being underground and non-transparent slash opaque, you know, name it and claim it, the stuff that the board does remains somewhat confidential from members, and the general membership aren't getting activity that they can feel like they're participating in as well with the board members. At least that's my perception of it.
Gotcha. I mean, well, that's important.
The board
that's important.
Has become the coffee party, and that's part of why I've submitted my resignation for the day after elections.
Okay. Well, we certainly want to do what we can to reverse that and to keep you.
Doesn't mean I'm going to stop listening to the shows, but it does mean that in an organization where we have this much division and this much acrimony over the division, it's not something I want to spend more time on it.
No, I hear you. I absolutely
and
hear you.
That
the frustration.
If that changes, that frustration, as you put it, will end.
But why
spend your time being frustrated?
I totally agree with you. So that's actually a good transition, if you don't mind. We'll pop back and hear the second part of Billy's interview because he is going to cover the convention and his time as executive director. Is that cool with you?
That's fine.
Excellent.
Okie dokes.
All right. Thanks for sharing, Bob. And, of course, you know, stick around. We're always happy to have you in the conversation.
You're welcome. I'll call.
All right. Thanks, Bob. All right, so that was Bob Woodburn from Pella, Iowa, a regular contributor to the show, class act, super historian, super constitutional historian. The man knows more about the Constitution than I think 99% of us will ever, or he's forgotten more than the 99% of us will ever know, and always love him. So we're going to go back to our interview. So this is going to be part two of Billy Sears' interview that I had over the weekend with him. Again, Billy was the executive or the deputy executive director of Coffee Party back in the day. And if you'd kind of like to catch you up if you missed his first segment, he's taken us from inception to the point where we're getting to the convention, and now he's going to relate his time really in the thick of things with the convention. Which, as you'll hear, got very thick. Hold on one second. Here's Billy Sears.
Well, that sounds familiar.
I'm very fond of saying, well, this isn't the first time we've been through this. And, you know, that's why.
Oh, my. Okay, so history is repeating itself all over again. Oh, boy. Well, I guess maybe we should have had this conversation before I started on the board. So you said you didn't talk to the members of the interim board after they were let go, but you at least got Annabelle's side of the story, right? What did she state as the reason why she let the interim board go?
Basically, she just didn't like the direction. Her, you know, since a long ago, I mean, I can't remember her exact words, but, and I mean, she actually, her and Aaron Byler actually did press release about all of this as well. You know, but basically, she just didn't feel that the interim board was going to be capable of doing the work necessary to help Coffee Party reach the point where it was going to have an actual election for an actual board of directors. I think the board was together for 6 months. In those 6 months, two of the members resigned. One of the members was actually a member of our local coffee party group here in Champaign. So, that was basically her reason, and she didn't feel that the board was actually going to be able to do the work that was necessary to create the organization.
Okay, so at this point in the organization's development, what was Eric Beiler's part?
He was actually not too involved, not until the transition team. And I do remember the first few meetings we had, you know, he held himself accountable for that. You know, he did like a lot of video work at the beginning, but, you know, my understanding was that, he just kind of wanted to separate himself from it for a while for various reasons. He was actually, within the first year, he was actually out in Arizona documenting everything that was going on with SB 1070, immigration law. But when everything kind of collided with the interim board and them issuing their press release, stating their side of everything, you know, he kind of came back into the fold, you know, apologized for not being, you know, more involved in all of this, and, you know, we just kind of went from there.
Okay, now was that work he did in Arizona, was that in support of 9500 Liberty, or was that a totally different project?
I'm honestly not sure.
Okay, well, let's talk about 9500 Liberty, because I know it drove a lot of revenue into the coffee party. Was that, to use a movie term, in the can when the party started?
My understanding is that it was. I do remember, kind of right at the beginning, you know, if my memory serves me correctly, and I do believe it does, and I've actually went to the Internet Archive, and on trying to kind of track down some early screenshots of the Coffee Party website. I mean, I was thinking they were actually selling the movie on the website, back on the Drupal website, in that little top left corner where, if anyone remembers the Drupal website, where we had the membership card asking folks to become a member. So whether, you know, they had some kind of arrangement where, you know, basically they sold the Coffee Party, you know, so many copies of 9500 Liberty for them to distribute, for the Coffee Party to earn profit, or if it was a link back directly to, the website for 9500 Liberty. I guess that's another question altogether for Eric Beiler, but, I mean, for some reason I was thinking it linked back directly to the website for the film.
Was all the money from that movie going to Coffee Party, or was just a proportion of it?
I'm honestly not sure about how this worked out in the early days. Like I said, I mean, if they were doing this legally, any money... Well, actually, if they were doing this legally, I don't really think that they could sell his film on our website. One's a 501c3 nonprofit, one's a 501c4. I mean, one's tax-exempt, one's not. I'm not a lawyer here, but, I mean, I hate to use the word here because we've heard it a lot lately, but if that was the case, that kind of felt like a conflict of interest. Excuse me.
From what I've been able to gather, that was never even brought up. Nobody even said anything about that, right?
Well, that's not necessarily true. When we had the Coffee Party convention, they actually hosted a screening of 9500 Liberty as kind of the closing of the convention. And not too long after the convention, there was something of an uprising. At this time, Annabelle was still president of the corporate board, and we had a few members. I'm not exactly sure of how many. It may have only been just one person. There may have been more people involved. But, yeah, they were pretty much calling for Annabelle to step down for conflict of interest. They felt that the Coffee Party was pretty much just there to promote 9500 Liberty, and that they were using 9500 Liberty to promote the Coffee Party, and that basically it was just a publicity game.
And are any of those folks still around?
No.
Do you think that was a, as far as membership, because obviously since the height of the membership, and I don't know if you know the numbers, what they were exactly, but obviously we've lost, you know, a huge amount of members. So was that a small impact?
I would say a small impact, and, you know, the reason I would say a small impact is, you know, at the time of this, I mean, we actually weren't a membership. We weren't a membership-based organization yet. We hadn't reached that point. You know, this all happened very quickly. I remember seeing a couple of Facebook posts. I remember seeing some kind of a statement from Annabelle. But, I mean, it seemed like it was all there and then gone, you know, within about 2 weeks. So, I mean, I'm not sure if, I mean, I don't know. This is just hearsay on my part. I'll be perfectly blunt about that. But, I mean, they may have threatened this gentleman's legal action. So,
do you recall what the, let's go a different path. So you said it wasn't a membership organization at the time. So, I mean, people were obviously donating money, right?
Right. Well, see, the decision to become a membership organization was the result of the interim board. This was something that they put into play. You know, we held a founding membership drive. It lasted a month. I mean, it was so successful around the end that they actually had to extend it by a few days because the number of donations coming in actually crashed our server. You know, I think we raised $125,000 in 1 month. And I think they said it was about, I can't remember the exact number, but so much of it came in during those last few days that, yeah, it was a pretty exciting experience to go through.
So do you recall a, just then again, around figures, that 125K, do you know about how many members ended up joining?
I think we ended up with about 5,000 during the founding member drive.
Okay, well, that sounds very successful. Do you care to give us your opinion? And obviously, well, I mean, of course, it's just going to be your opinion, right? But what happened, what do you see as kind of the fundamental changes that took place that, you know, led the membership to evacuate in haste and in large number?
Well, I would equate it to organizational chaos. I mean, that's about the best way to put it. You know, there really was... We were never really that good at offering support to local organizers. We tried. You know, we actually hired a staff member to, you know, come up with, you know, a local organizing program that would actually allow these chapters to officially affiliate with us and achieve their own nonprofit status and let them raise money for themselves. You know, I mean, there were a lot of big plans with that, but, you know, unfortunately, that was one of the employees that we had to lay off. It was just, I mean, it was just organizational chaos. I mean,
Well, let's talk about that for a second, if you don't mind. So, I've had the pleasure of getting to know Leah Spitzer over the last couple of months, and one of the stories she related to me is that her initial position or and or her initial project that she was assigned was to come up with that organizational structure and processes. And what she has told me is that she created a very robust set of processes and organizational structures that intended to do exactly that, to kind of put the skeleton up, as it were, so that then you could, like, you know, drape the meat off of it. But that eventually that was file 13. Were you involved at all with that? Do you have any recollection of that?
Well, as an employee, I mean, I had my fingers in a piece of just about every, piece of pie. I wasn't directly involved with every little project, but, you know, I kind of made sure I knew what was going on, so to speak. I wasn't directly involved with that aspect of Leah's work, but, you know, it's what she said is accurate, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we want to talk to as many people. Speaking of which, just by way of suggestion, besides Leah, maybe Debbie Lynn Molyneux, who else do you think could lend some unique perspective to the story of the coffee party, the early years?
I could give you a long list of people. I mean, unfortunately, you know, a lot of these people that have volunteered to help out on the national side to help build this ship, you know, they're no longer with us. You know, they've left for, you know, various reasons. I think that's about the best way to put that.
So there you go. That's the end of part two of Billy Sears. The Billy Sears interview. So at first we had, again, just to kind of piece it together on a timeline basis, so we had the beginning of this organization, a great, huge thrust of success, capped off by a single month where 5,000 members joined and they raised over $125,000. And we had local organizations and chapters forming and meeting. The number that I'm familiar with estimation I'm familiar with is about 30 different local chapters. And but then we had some trouble in transition, so to speak. So we had the organization that was basically being driven by Annabelle and Eric, and then they were ready to transition it over to a more democratic process and bring in the membership and get their ideas. So we had the transition team. That started and ended with their dismissal. We had a consultant that was hired was brought in, created an organizational structure, a plan with processes, and then that was also not implemented. So that seems to be, so far, in Billy's experience, the where the kind of rubber stopped hitting the road, as it were. But just to remind you, since it's been a while, this is Press One for Democracy. My name is Dan Aronson. You're listening to Coffee Party Radio. Coffee Party is 100% membership funded. And so if you are not a member of the Coffee Party and you like what we're doing and you like our mission, like what we stand for, then please go to coffeepartyusa.com. And join up. You'll see the big button on the right side that'll tell you how to join up. If you don't want to join up, but you'd like to just donate, make a donation, you can donate there as well. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, I know there's a few people out there in the chat room that are talking a little bit about their experiences. Love to hear from you. We do have another segment of the Billy Sears interview that takes us basically to the Enough is Enough rally. But this is a live call-in show, and we would love to hear from anybody out there. Lots of callers in queue, but nobody wants to hit number one and raise their hand. So I hope that they are sufficiently entertained by the interview process. So I guess if nobody wants to share, then we will go back and we will listen to part three of the Billy Sears interview and see how things go in the next segment.
Well, that sounds familiar.
I'm very fond of saying, well, this isn't the first time we've been through this.
But my apologies, that was part two all over again. Ah, here's part three.
Okay. And so you said you were an employee, so you started out as a local organizer, then you got involved in the more and more in the national organization until, I assume at first as a volunteer, but then you said you eventually became an employee. What was that transition like?
Well, it was really by accident. I was browsing the internet and I came across a training that was being hosted by the New Organizing Institute in D.C. For anyone that's not familiar with the NOI, it's basically a group that trains progressive activists. The training was on nonprofit management. So I actually started a little mini fundraising campaign to help raise money for it. And Annabelle got wind of it, and she actually got us both into the program. And it was a week long, and you know, she actually, you know, she let me stay with her and her family for the training. And you know, we really got to know each other. And you know, within about a month after that training, I mean, she personally offered me employment. And that, unfortunately, that also kind of caused a schism between her and the board because, you know, they didn't feel that she should be, you know, personally offering employment without consulting them, which, you know, I mean, I do think that's valid. You know, I mean, she's one person and she sits on a board. You know, I mean, I can see their point on that matter.
And was she the president of the board at that time?
Yes.
Okay. And what job did you get hired for? What was your role?
Well, initially I was deputy managing director. That was kind of the unofficial term. The transition team actually worked up an official job description for me, and it was director of membership administration. So basically I took on pretty much everything that Annabelle was doing, because she needed a break. It kind of turned into, having my finger in pretty much every piece of the pie, so to speak. It's crazy. I mean, when I took the job, I never expected it to be a 7 day a week, about, 18-hour day job, but, you know, I mean, I loved it. You know, I mean, I got to work with some pretty amazing people. You know, we had a vision. You know, we had some great consultants that came in and helped us because, you know, we didn't know what we were doing. You know, none of us knew how to build an organization. You know, so, I mean, I had some great consultants that came in. This is how Debbie Lynn Molino came in to the national side of the coffee party. They helped us come up with the groundwork, you know, for an organization. And, I mean, it really is a shame that, you know, once the new board was seated, none of it saw the light of day.
And Why did none of it see the light of day?
Well, I mean, to be perfectly honest, Eric didn't like it. He felt it was too bureaucratic. There's a lot he didn't agree with. He pretty much sequestered the new board from the transition team. That's as direct as I can get about that. Even when the new board was seated, I still participated in their weekly conference calls. They started with absolutely no structure. And that's a shame because, Debbie Lynn Molyneux might be able to correct me on the number here, but I was thinking that the number was about $40,000 that we spent on this plan that never saw the light of day.
And how many consultants were involved?
There was Walt. He was kind of the lead guy, changing the game. That was the consultant group. Heather Tischbein, who actually turned into our development director. Debbie Lynn, of course. I believe it was just those three. Yeah.
And so they put about how many months of work into this plan?
Well, the initial plan was only supposed to be for 4 months, but we ended up retaining them for, I believe, about six. It might have actually been a little longer, but I think it was about 6 months.
So 6 months and $40,000 worth of work, file 13.
Yep, exactly.
Now, well, let me ask you. Let's go back to your role for a second. So you were basically, it sounds like, number two on the totem pole. Did you have autonomy to make decisions, or were you more expected to just carry out the Annabelle and Eric's will, as it were?
I had autonomy. I had autonomy. I was really I was the back end guy, so to speak. I've never, been comfortable, kind of putting myself on display like that. I was the back end guy. whenever we'd send out, emails or anything like that, my name would be attached to a lot of them, but I was comfortable being kind of that back end guy. I let Annabelle and Eric handle the activism, and I pretty much tried to take care of the business side of it.
Okay, so you produced while they were directing and acting.
Right.
Let's move forward in time for a second, and when does the rally happen?
The rally is very long and full of story. It basically started out as Annabelle's idea. She created a Facebook page. She laid out the basic framework for it, and it was never intended to be a coffee party event when it started. And I don't think there's a lot of people that know that.
I, for one, did not.
The deal we had with Annabelle was we was going to offer her some seed money and access to the coffee party database. That was the original deal. It was going to be an event completely independent of the coffee party. And if you actually look at some of the advertising for the rally, there's no mention of coffee party at all. That was thrown in there as an afterthought. What happened was we found out how much work this was going to be. Annabelle came to the board, the interim board at the time, and said, we need your help. And it got pretty heated because, you know, there were a lot of us who saw what was going on, what kind of resources she was using, and kind of we got kind of frustrated that, you know, we're helping her build a new organization, and she's piggybacking it off of the other organization, Gotham Party. So her and Eric ended up coming to the board because they needed help. It basically turned into either you guys vote for this or we're walking. So that's how Coffee Party got involved in the Enough is Enough rally.
So had Annabelle already stepped down at that point?
She was still president of the corporate board, but up until the rally, she really didn't have much involvement with what the transition team was doing. She did have some issues with Walt Roberts, who was the head of Changing the Game. So she just kind of stepped away.
So I'm trying to piece this together now. So Annabelle was she was still the president of the corporate board, but this idea was actually hatched as a non-coffee party idea by her, and then she came to the coffee party and threatened to either leave, unless they participated, and part of that participation was handing over the membership database.
Right. And once it became an official coffee party event, that's when it really got interesting.
But is it safe to say, Billy, that before it became an official coffee party event, we've just witnessed our second extremely large conflict of interest? I mean, is she leveraging the membership database, and she's the corporate president, but she's doing it to put on something that's not coffee party?
You know, I see what you did there, and you know, I never once thought about it that way, but yeah, I mean, yeah, that does make sense.
Okay, again, I'm just trying to get the facts straight, because again, I wasn't there, but I think a lot of our listeners are going to be very interested in that little story. So, okay. Well, I didn't mean to interrupt. Sorry, you were about to say that once it became an official coffee party event, then you said things got very interesting. How so?
Well, pretty much everything that we were doing to build the ship, so to speak, was put on halt for the rally. We lost a lot of the volunteers who came to the coffee party, you know, for the mission, you know, civil discourse, you know, participation in politics. And what we were focusing on with the rally, you know, I mean, if you just look at the name, you know, Enough is Enough. You know, I don't think a lot of people really, you know, agreed with that. You know, it was kind of the direction we were taking with the rally. I mean, it was centered all around, you know, citizens participating in the process, you know, through various ways. But, you know, there was a lot of folks that didn't really recognize the coffee party through this event. And that makes perfect sense because, like I said, I mean, it wasn't originally a coffee party event. You know, everything that we were doing pretty much shifted to prep work for the rally. Annabelle was pretty much calling most of the shots. You know, we had weekly calls, myself, Debbie Lynn, our former employee for chapter development, and also one of Annabelle's friends who also helped plan the coffee party convention. She was hired as a consultant for the rally. So we had weekly calls about that. Pretty much everything turned into the rally. You know, we ended up hiring consultants, just spending just a lot of money, for this event. If I recall correctly, we started with an initial budget. They came back, needed more money. It was approved. And it just, it was an interesting few months. I think that's about the best way I can put it.
So there you go. Part three of the Billy Sears interview. Boy, it's been a lot to absorb. I hope you have found this both interesting and educational. This was actually only last night that I sat down and had this conversation with Billy, and it was very, very eye-opening and very enlightening. So, again, I hope that for the newer folks out there, you're learning. I see there's a lot of cool comments going on in the chat room about ways to leverage this knowledge, and at this point, I think we probably have enough of the interview. And what I'd like to do is open up the phones. They've always been open, but if it's not a matter of sharing what your experiences were in the early years of the coffee party, then based on what you've heard from this interview, you know, what are the things that you think we can take away? The good things we can move forward with, and the things maybe we can look at changing that weren't working back in the day, and how can we go forward and make this a better coffee party? I don't know what version we're on these days. I think we've had if we count the interim board and we count the transition team as coffee parties 2.0 and 3.0, then I guess we're looking at coffee party 4 or 5.0. But whatever version you want to take it. So if you would like to be part of the solution, give us a call at 646-929-2495 and press 1, and we'll pop you onto the call and get your ideas on how we can do things better and build this organization the way that I think everybody wants to, a strong force for civility, for reason, and for change in our political system. But for now, let's hear about the other Coffee Party radio shows.
Hi, this is Dan Aronson, and you're listening to Press One for Democracy, heard here every Monday night on Coffee Party Radio starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Did you know that there's an entire lineup of Coffee Party radio shows that airs each week? On Thursdays, our executive director, Janine Loudon, hosts Lunch with Loudon, starting at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Saturdays, Egberto Willis hosts Politics Done Right, starting at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the newest edition of our Coffee Party radio family joins us on Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's Bud Fields with Progressive Politics Tennessee Style. And remember, unlike our current federal government, Coffee Party Radio is of the people, by the people, and for the people. Each show, you'll have the chance to call in at area code 646-929-2495 so you can stand up and be heard. When you can't make it with us live, remember that all of our shows are available to you 24/7 in our online archives. So again, this is Dan Aronson on behalf of all Coffee Party Radio hosts and our entire membership, saying thanks for joining us to discuss the issues of the day, the Coffee Party way.
And there you have it, Coffee Party Radio lineup. We've done the business of asking for your help, financially speaking, and becoming a member. And at this point, I see I've got 7 callers in queue, but nobody seems to want to chat with me about how we can build a better coffee party at this time. So I know that this, you know, the one thing I can add on to Billy's interview was this. In my iteration of the board, we had this brilliant man named Michael Cherney, who I'm sure a lot of you know, who came to us with the actually his job, is what he does for a living, is creating organizational structures. And it was kind of funny when I told, well, funny in a tragic way, I guess, when I told Leah Spitzer that Michael had done this, because Leah said, I did that. She goes, why did Michael have to do that again? I did that 2 years ago, and it just got buried. So Michael came to the board. We went to Washington, D.C. The board sequestered ourselves in a quaint old house on the outskirts of Washington, D.C., and we spent 2.5 days planning, and a lot of that a good portion of the meeting was looking at Michael's plan and how to put organizational structure in a place so that we could lay the proper foundation that that we don't seem to have at this point, and so that we can again move forward and build out this organization the way we want. And unfortunately, that organizational plan met with the exact same fate as Leah's organizational plan. So that's certainly something that I'm sure the next board will be looking into, and hopefully this time, maybe third time's a charm, and we can finally get on with the business of building the strong and large organization that we'd all like. So I'll tell you what, since I'm exhausted from the long weekend and a lot of soccer, I will just go out and close out the show by saying thank you very much for listening. We will continue this next week and delve more into our past, our shared past, and what ways we can learn from it and move forward with it. So with that, I thank you. Have a great week, all, and we will see you around the coffee party.